we normally give. And but we're so grateful to see how many people are coming on little by little by little. Just a quick thank you to our sponsors. I want to thank Vivian Bolag for sponsoring today's share with Rabbi Nissel, and thank you, Rabbi Nissel, for being here. For Le'ilui Nishmas Moshe Yitzchak ben Levi Halevi and Shimon ben Moshe, Aschus for Refuah Shalema for Chaim Shlomo ben Esther Miriam, for Yehoshua Levi ben Ahuva Malka Chana, for Yechiel Mechel ben Rachel, for Liba Yehudis Bas Yocheved, for Chana Zahava Bas Miriam Esther, for Chaya Fega Bas Chana Riva, for Shendel Bas Esther, Besok Shar Choli Yisrael. And may all of Klai Yisrael merit to see the Geula speedily in our days. And I want to add, please, that Hashem, that we should all scream out today, for real, from the gut-wrenching places of our hearts and our neshamas, that He opens up the doors for all the hostages to come home, that all the chayalim and chayalot can come home, and that all of His children could come home to Him, because this is what He's yearning for, and this is what we're yearning for, Hashem. And we don't want it to be like this anymore. And I just want to say that the Chizuk mission, that everybody that's here, it's the whole point of it is that it should ignite and open up our hearts and neshamas to come close to ourselves, to our neshamas, to Hashem, and take responsibility for the Jewish people that we were brought here to be His light, to be His emissaries, to be His ambassadors. And we gotta stop playing small here, each and every one of us, and let's go. Rabbi Nissel, thank you for being here, and thank you everybody for being here.
I'd like to begin the share by quoting from one of the keynotes that we said this morning. This is Kina Lamed Aleph 31. For those of you who do not have keynotes accessible, I'll just give you a very quick summary of what the Kina is all about. It's a series of contrasts between what it was like for the Jewish people to leave the land of Egypt and to go and accept the Torah, in contrast to what it was like for the Jewish people to leave Yerushalayim and to go out into Galus. And it goes through the letter Aleph Beis, and when it reaches the letter Tes, it says the following words, and I quote, Toivu Ohalim L'Arba Degolim, how beautiful, how goodly were our Jewish tents. They were divided into four encampments. Betzeisim in Mitzrayim, when I came out of Egypt, meaning when the Jewish people came out of Egypt, as Bilam HaRasha described, the Jewish people were beautiful in how they were encamped and how they were in perfect formation. The next line says the following, V'ale Yishma'elim U'machanes Arelim B'tzeisim Yerushalayim. The contrast is the tents of Yishma'elim. This is the nation that we associate with Islam. Umachanus Arelim and the encampments of the uncircumcised ones, that's a reference to Christianity. Betzesi in Yerushalayim, when it came out of Yerushalayim. Yishmael, as we all know, they have the mitzvah of Bris Milah. So Arelim is Esav and Yishmaelim is Yishmael. And the two of them are waiting, so to speak, in partnership as we came out of Yerushalayim. When the war in Iran began just over a month ago, I was stuck in Poland and had a chance to think the way that my teachers always taught me to think. Always ask yourself when you see current events, what is the HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying to us? What is the message that we're getting from above? I'm sure a lot of my listeners now remember after Simchas Torah, I was begging everyone not to lose the narrative. Everyone called it October 7th, and I was saying, Kadosh Baruch Hu, you spoke to us on Simchas Torah, on a time of giving the Torah through Simcha. It was Shabbos Kodesh. And I try to say, according to my understanding, what Hashem was saying to us. The Iran war began on Shabbos Parshas Bahaloisecha. Shabbos Parshas Bahaloisecha is exactly, but exactly what I just read to you from this Kina, Betzesi Miyushalayim, Betzesi Mimitzrayim. Parshas Bahaloisecha is two stories that switch from the Jewish people being exactly the way they're supposed to be to everything going wrong. Allow me to explain. The first half of Ba'al HaYisrael is basically a continuation of Bamidbar and Naso, Ba'al HaYisrael describing the Jewish people as they travel through this world. It's well known that the Sefer Devarim is an allegory to the Jewish history, the history of the Jewish people throughout the ages. In the beginning, everything is good, everything is perfect. Everyone has their makom, everyone has their place. Each nation, each part of the Jewish people has a flag. A flag implies individuality, self-expression. It's perfect when that flag is in harmony with the other flags surrounding the holy Mishkan, where the Shekhinah, Hashem's presence is. Bottom line is, when everyone is doing their thing, the right place, the right time, the right expression, bringing out their essence, and it is focus on that centerpiece, which is God Himself, the Jewish people are doing well. The Jewish people flourish. In the middle of Ba'al HaYisrael, there's a switch. The Jewish people start complaining. They complain about food. Afterwards, everything goes downhill. The next parsha, they're saying Lashon Hara about the land of Israel with the spies. After that, there's machlokas, this inward fighting with Korach. After that, we have awful stories, one after the other, climaxing with the Jewish people assimilating with the Midianites. So everything goes well, and then there's a switch, and then everything goes bad. I asked at the beginning of the Iran war, what was the cause of the switchover? Which sort of speaks to me because I want to know what's happening in this war, what's happening in this Iran war. And Rashi tells us the switchover was the way that the Jewish people left the holy, holy encampment at Har Sinai. It says they ran away, ketinoik habareach mibeis ha-sefer, like children running away from their kindergarten, from their schools. The Jewish people ran away from Har Sinai. I'm not going to go into my proofs. I just want to give over a summary of what I said back then. Is the key to the way the Jewish people left Mount Sinai was not that they abandoned the Ten Commandments. On the contrary, they wanted to go out and fulfill them. They wanted to get to the land of Israel. The key was what they were abandoning was what's called in Hebrew Ma'amad Har Sinai, the event of Har Sinai. At the event of Har Sinai, the Jewish people reached perfection. At Har Sinai, before we even got the Torah, we were, and I quote, Ki ish echad, belev echad. We were one nation beating with one heart. We were all together. Just like I, there's no contradiction between my head and my toes. It's all one. And every part of every single part of me feels each other's pain and shares each other's joy. That's how the Jewish people were at Har Sinai. Not only that, at Har Sinai, something else beautiful happened. We reached a point, and I'm quoting from Maimonides, from the Rambam, Emunah she'ein bo dafi. We had faith that had no questions, that came without any doubt, meaning every single one of us has challenges. Every single one of us is experiencing pain of either a loved one or through it ourselves, God forbid. We all feel pain, but at Har Sinai, there was no pain. Why? Because suddenly we saw everything from the other side. Suddenly, we saw with total clarity where everything had to be that way. The Jewish people enjoyed for a short amount of time the clarity that faith was there for a reason. Everything Hashem does is for a reason. I want to focus mainly on the first one, that the Jewish people had this thing called Ki Ish Echad, B'Lev Echad. The Jewish people, the way we're supposed to be, is one nation pulsating with one heart. That is something that the Iran war was, I think Hashem was telling us, try and go back there, try and recreate what we had. The Iran war, we were zocheh, we merited many miracles, an incredible, incredible period of our history, those 12 days. But there's very much a feeling here in Israel, and I'm sure that you're feeling it very much yourself, that the Jewish people are slipping back to their old ways. I asked myself, what happened during the 9 days? We're now at the climax of the 9 days. The last 9 days, the one thing that stuck out, excuse me, two things that stood out for me. Number one was that anti-Semitism has become mainstream. What do I mean by that? In France and England and Canada and Australia, making pronouncements from their governments that in my language and in your language means one thing and one thing only. Jewish blood is free to spill. That's how I translate going past the politics, going past all the cheshbonis, the calculations. Bottom line is that if there's a state of Palestine from the river to the sea, that means there's no Jews. And if the Jews deserve this, because they're guilty of crimes and they're guilty of genocides, you can do what you want to a Jew. Now, this fact that we are now going through insane anti-Semitism, I personally, since I was in Poland, I was afterwards in Italy, I personally was screamed at, not by lowlifes, by what they say in Yiddish, bessere Menschen, university students screaming at me, free Palestine. That's the new Heil Hitler. It's different from what happened in the 1930s. In the 1930s, the Jewish people were in danger in East Europe, in Central Europe, but the rest of the world, Jews were safe. Today, there is not a single corner of the world where Jews can call themselves safe. Nations that have never seen Jews, places like Finland and Iceland, and places that have no connection to the Jewish people, are coming out with statements one after the other. The Jews are to blame. The Jews are to blame. Not Israel, Jews. There was one thing that hit me so hard over the last 9 days, and it brought me back to what I've been saying over the last 2 years, that the source of anti-Semitism is Parshas Shmos. This is where it all began. The Jewish people as a nation, where the Medrash brings down at the very beginning, when the Jewish people started to feel comfortable in the Egyptian Empire, Egypt was a superpower of the world at that time then. Yosef HaTzadik had gone. The Jewish people slowly but surely were assimilating. The Medrash describes the assimilation. And Hashem responds with, and I quote, Hafach libam lisnei oisam. Hashem unnaturally turns over the hearts of the people, the Egyptian people, to hate their fellow Jew. Let me translate that to you in the language of 2025. Your neighbor, whoever he or she may be, one day they can love you, the next day they can hate you. Why? Does not make any sense. Hashem does it. I called it, some of you may have read my anti-Semitism article last month with Mishpacha. I call it the Candace Owens effect. I just use it as a well-known example of someone who flips to hate us overnight. For me, I think of my mother who grew up in Germany, how she describes how overnight her classmates were her best friends and now they hate them. I have students in NCSY who describe the same thing. These kids go to public schools. They grew up with Muslim friends, as they do. They played with them. They grew up with them. They were in each other's houses. Overnight, boom, hatred, absolute hatred. You are now our enemies. So that is one thing that I noticed came up on a whole new level during those days where the Jewish people are not protected, the 9 days of Av. But there was another one, and the second one is what I want to focus on. It was, I'm a little bit of a news junkie, I'm embarrassed to say, but I noticed something that made me shake all over. It was an article, two articles, about two human rights groups in Israel. One was called B'Tselem, the other was called the Israeli branch of Physicians for Human Rights. So these are doctors. These are doctors. Doctors are the good people. And they both said independently, as part of a whole paper presentation, that yes, our soldiers are committing genocide. And yes, our soldiers are committing torture against the local population. Now, there's another article. The second one was called from an NGO called Im Tirtzu, and they showed the direct correlation between Jews, Israelis, saying negative things against our leaders and against our soldiers, and how it filters out into the world outside. And they showed that there are now hundreds of examples of the sources of our enemies using Jews and quoting Jews. Why do you call me an anti-Semite? I'm just quoting Jewish doctors. I'm quoting your own people. If your own people are saying this about your soldiers, it's got to be true, and you must be punished. There has to be vengeance. So this is something different. This is what's called in the words of Yeshayahu HaNavi, Achechem, Soinechem, Menaidechem, your brothers. I want to stress this, your brothers. I'm not talking about, I don't go with that narrative that they cease to be our brothers. I'm the country, I'm a Talmud of Rosh Shlomo Volba. Today, in 2025, every Jew has got a din of a Tinek Shenishma. They don't know better. I want to judge them favorably. They're our brothers, Seinechem, but they hate me and they hate us. And today, also, they hate the Torah world. And Menadechem, the word Menadechem comes from the word to be Menuda, to be put into excommunication, to be put into a place that you are not regular people, you are not normal people, you are not civilized people. They put us down as we are below that line called humanity and civilization. These are our own brothers and sisters. In New York, I just read this crazy statistic that this Jew hater who's trying to be the new mayor of New York, he has a 17-point advantage over Jewish voters. Overwhelmingly, liberal Jewish voters will vote for them. And what was scary for me is that he has a massive command amongst our youth, which means young people who don't know better, who are not educated, they haven't even been to Israel. They overwhelmingly, Jewish kids, they look at him as a hero. So we're living in a very scary world where our own brothers and our own sisters are turning against us. I want you to know that this is not new history, this is old history. Moshe Rabbeinu surely knew that Jewish people were assimilating. Moshe Rabbeinu surely knew that the Jewish people and the consequence of anti-Semitism when they assimilate, he surely saw that. But when Moshe Rabbeinu went out to see his people, he still had the same question. The Jewish people are assimilating. The Jewish people are not behaving the way they should. But why should they suffer so much? Why are they suffering so much? Why do they not get redeemed by Hashem? He couldn't understand it until he saw two people, Dasan va'Aviron, these two people who represent the so-called fifth column of the Jewish people, who meet their final demise in the story of Korach, in the fight against Korach, at least had a reason. But Dasan v'Aviram, they fought for the sake of fighting. In this story, Dasan v'Aviram are fighting, and Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, "Rasha, lama takes chavercha? Why are you hitting your friend? How crazy is this?" They said, "We will." They're fighting against each other. They're fighting to the death. And they said, "We will go out and we will tell about you, Moshe Rabbeinu, to your patron, Pharaoh, and you will get the death penalty." And then Moshe Rabbeinu says, "I understand. I see what's happening over here. If Jewish people work against their own brothers and sisters, they lose the right to be saved. There's no hope for them." So now I want to get to my point, because everything I said till now, I'm just telling you politics in a sense. This is crazy what's going on in the world. I want to bring this to us. I want to say to you and me, because the people who are listening to me now, we are the people who, quote unquote, we get it. We know that everything that is happening in this world is very simple. It's a conversation between Hashem and the Jewish people. Every single person I'm talking to knows that the news that we read, the politics that we talk about, is a distraction, is ultimate distraction, unless we see past it and ask, Bekamim alei mareim tishmana oznai. When my enemies come up against us, what is Hashem saying to me? It's always that way. My Rebbe, Rav Moshe Shapiro, used to always quote the Brisker Rav. Now, the Brisker Rav was a person who, at first glance, he had very, very strong opinions. But when it came to the suffering of Klal Yisrael, he used to say the same thing again and again. They are not the problem. We are the problem. He said it in Yiddish. We're the ma'afkim. We are the ones that are preventing Mashiach from coming. Meaning, do not look at so-called secular Jews, at Jews, those I mentioned beforehand, teenagers in New York who are voting for a man that hates Israel. Do not look at them and get upset. Look at that person in the mirror. Look at ourselves. We are the ones that are preventing the Geula. Remember, Dathan ve'Aviram, the leaders of the Jewish people. If you saw them, they probably had long beard and pears. We are the ones that are holding things back. So now I want to get to my main point. Because today is Tisha B'Av. Today is the source of all our suffering. And everything boils down to this thing called sinas chinam, needless hatred. I want to expand on this just a little bit. I want to explain what it means on a deeper level than we normally accept. What does it mean, Jewish unity? What does it mean, ki'ish echad b'lev echad? What does it mean that Har Sinai, every single one of us, was different parts of the same Adam? Adam, that same Adam Harishon Lifnei Achet, that same perfection. What does it mean? So I want to share with you, first of all, in Medrash Rabbah, in Parshas Devarim, Achav was one of the worst kings the Jewish people ever had. Achav was the one that he pursued Eliyahu HaNavi. He made life hell, Gehenim, for the Torah community. When his armies went out, they were tremendously successful. It's a crazy thing. When the Medrash contrasted with Shaul HaMelech went out, his soldiers would fall. Says the Medrash, Achav, with all his evil, amongst the Jewish people, there was harmony. Amongst the Jewish people, there was no sinas chinam. They had that. Shaul's army did not have that. If the Jewish people know how to get on with each other, so then everyone is instantly protected, even if we are still doing things that are not favorable in Hashem's eyes. Let me show you something extraordinary. There's a Gemara in Gittin, Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, 57a. The Gemara brings down about the massacres that happened during the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. One of them was a place called Tor Malka. Tor means a mountain. Tor Malka, Mount Tor, Mount Malka. It was a place that had a massive Jewish population. The Talmud brings down, and I quote, it says, I'm just going to do it straight into English, 300,000 swordsmen descended on Tor Malka. These are the Roman legions. These people know no mercy. They come down, 300,000. And for 3 days and for 3 nights, they are massacring the Jewish people. It probably was 1,000 times worse than what happened in Simchas Torah a year ago. 1,000 times worse. This was the Churban itself, Tor Malka. But then it goes on to say the most horrific words. On that mountain, they were killing people on one side. On the other side, the Jewish people were not aware of what was going on. It doesn't say that. It just said the Jewish people were dancing and celebrating. It was a time, I didn't know what was going on. Weddings were happening. And the Jewish people at that point then were celebrating. And then the Gemara brings down these crazy words. V'loy haviyadi hani bihani. No one knew what was going on at the other side of the mountain. The people celebrating were not aware of the massacres. The people being massacred were not aware of the celebration. What on earth is the Gemara teaching us with those words? My dear friends, I'm going to say something to you. I promise you, I'm talking to myself. I promise you, I wish I could be on this level. But this is what it means a Jew is expected to be like. Even if you cannot hear the screams, even if you cannot hear the shouts of the people suffering, the Jew has to instinctively feel the suffering of another Jew, even if you're not aware on the external level. On the internal level, you're supposed to know. If you are part of that same body called the Jewish people, the brain knows what's happening with our feet. We know. The Jewish people are connected to each other. There's no such thing, this is your problem, this is your problem. No, we're all in this together, but we should know this instinctively without even hearing about it. I had this moment today when I wanted to print out a picture I saw of one of our hostages digging his own grave. I simply, when I read it, I saw this. I said, I don't want to show this picture because it looks out something from the Holocaust and it's happening now. I just want to ask the question, how much do we feel this person's pain? Just want to ask this simple question. With the whole thing with the hostages, I had difficulty in relating. So what I did, I took one hostage. Whatever. Segev ben Galit was his name. I just chose one randomly and I said, he's going to be the person I'm going to daven for the whole time. I wanted to try and personalize it and make it real. So every day I try and think about his pain. I don't know how I can do it. I don't want to do it. I transfer davening for him to Rafaenu because there's no question that everyone over there is now on whispers away from their deaths. We should feel their suffering. But it's not just the suffering of the hostages. This is the obvious ones. But what Klal Yisrael is going through, every single one of us has to know what it means to feel the suffering of another Jew. And I want to bring this more into the world of reality. First of all, I want to begin with a statement from Rav Dov Kook. Rav Dov Kook of Tveria, he said this in the name of his grandfather, the Rav Kook, I think it's his great grandfather, I don't know exactly. But Rav Dov Kook said that we use this phrase, Avas Chinam. Avas Chinam is not a real phrase. By the way, I heard this also from Rav Moshe Shapiro, but I didn't hear it as strongly as Rav Kook said it. I heard this also from Rav Nevin Sal. It's a new phrase. And anyone that uses the word Avas Chinam, don't correct them. Because I think it's a beautiful phrase, but technically it's wrong. This is what Dov Kook was saying. There's no such thing with a Jew, Avas Chinam. Sinas Chinam means I love you for no reason. But you cannot love a Jew for no reason. You have to love a Jew for a reason. And that reason is, says Rav Kook, he explains so beautifully in his own language, because every Jew is built in the image of Hashem. And every Jew is part of you. You don't love your foot for no reason. You love your foot because it's you. And all of you is connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He said something so beautiful. Let me just read you. The pasuk says, V'ahavta l'recha kameicha. What's the new next two words? Ani Hashem. Says Rav Kook, this is how you read it. V'ahavta l'recha kameicha, Ani Hashem. I am Hashem and I'm inside every single Jew. So you love every single Jew, just like you love Hashem. Another thing he quoted in the name of the Kamaran Rebbe, this is so powerful. He said the phrase "Vahavta l'recha kamocha ani Hashem" is exactly the same gematria as "Vahavta es Hashem." They're both 907. I checked it out. It meaning loving another Jew is loving Klal Yisrael, is loving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is loving the fact that we're each together, Ki Ish Echad B'Lev Echad, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's breath inside of us. Ultimately, we're all the expression of Adam HaRishon Lifnei HaChet, Klal Yisrael, that perfect human being, that Hashem breathed His essence into us. That's Klal Yisrael. That is Klal Yisrael. So you can't be do Avas Chinam. You love a Jew because he is you. And if he is you have to feel that plane instinctively. I just want to share with you a quick story. I have time, okay? So I'm gonna share with you two quick stories. The first one was the Baal Tanya. The Baal Tanya, the Alter Rebbe, once saw his son learning while holding his child, or the child was in the pram. I don't know which one it was in his in pushing his child. The child was crying away, and the father was so deep into his learning, he didn't notice the child's pain. So the father, meaning the grandfather, the Alter Rebbe, told his son, he says, "What's going on? Your child is crying." He says, "Oh, I'm sorry, Tata, I'm sorry. My mind was in learning." The Baal Tanya said to his son, "Listen to this Musar, because this is how we should be." He said, "If you are studying Gemara and you don't feel the pain of your child, you're not studying Gemara properly. You hear this? There's something wrong with your Gemara learning." I mean, obviously, he was so into his learning, he was in a different world. But Torah cannot be without feeling the pain of another Jew. It's something that cannot happen. Other story. If you ever go to Krakow, so you'll know that in the famous cemetery in Krakow, at the very back there, there's the Bach, the Bais Chadosh, the leader of the Jewish people. You have a few rows in front, the Megala Amukos, which means the one that knows the secrets. It's written on his kever. This is a man who frequently spoke to Eliyahu HaNavi. The Megala Amukos was mystical. My father used to always talk about the Megala Amukos in language of awe. And the Bach was the halachic leader of the Jewish people. The Bach had a son-in-law called the Taz, Terezov. The Bach and the Taz is learned at any single moment. The Taz is one of the commentaries on Shulchan Aruch, and the Bach is one of the commentaries together with the Bet Yosef, the Beis Yosef on the Torah. These people, their works are studied at any given moment. You can't open a page of halacha without the Bach and the Taz, father-in-law, son-in-law. The Taz lived in the neighboring city of Lvov, Lwow, of Lvov. And this is, it's about 2 days' travel with horse and buggy. Today, you just cross over the Ukrainian border and you're there. The Taz came to visit his father-in-law. At that point, then, the Taz was the Rav of the city. And as he left, the whole town came out to greet him. And the Taz, obviously, holy man, focus. He's visiting his father-in-law. He comes to Krakow. As he comes to Krakow, the town of Krakow comes out to greet the great Godel HaDor, the Taz, the Bach son-in-law. One person didn't come out to greet him. Who was that? Megala Amukos. He stayed in his house. Some of you know, again, I just came from Poland. We actually know where the Megala Amukos' house is. If you know what I'm talking about, you've got the Ramoshal on one side. And you've got the shul, the big shul on the other side, to the left, where Megala Amukos lived. The Bach lived at the other end of the square. The Megala Amukos doesn't come out to greet him. What's going on over here? One day, 2 days, 3 days. Eventually, the Rabbanim go to the Bach and say, this is a pagam in Kavod HaTorah. This is something that is hurting the honor of Torah, that the Megala Murkus is not leaving his room to come and say Shalom Aleichem to the Taz, to the Holy Taz. To cut the story short, they decide to put the Megala Murkus into Cheirem. They ostracized him. And to the point, the Megala Murkus already knew this with his Ruach HaKodesh, that when people came to him with questions, he already told them, "No one's allowed to talk to me." The whole thing was a bizarre story. After 30 days, the Megala Murkus leaves his house, goes to the Taz, and wishes him a Shalom Aleichem. And no one knows what's going on. Well, he waited 30 days to say Shalom Aleichem. Doesn't he know that he is being punished by the community for not wishing him Shalom Aleichem? Why is he coming now? Listen to this, ladies. The Megala Murkus tells the Taz, obviously he did it in a very, very respectful way, "I knew that for the last 30 days, you in heaven, you, the Taz, were ostracized. You were in a state of nidui, of excommunication in the higher worlds." Taz doesn't know what's going on. What is happening? The holy Taz was ostracized in the higher worlds. Explains the Megala Amukis, "Do you remember when you left town? The whole town came out to say goodbye to you." He says, "Yeah." He says, "Do you remember that there was a widow who was banging on your door, asking for help?" And the Taz says, "I don't know what you're talking about." He says, "There was. And you were not attuned to the pain of that widow. You did not realize that she was asking you for help. You were in your own world. That's not how a Jewish leader is supposed to be. We're supposed to feel the pain of every single one of us." I'm telling you these stories, even though I know that this is a very high level, but I still see I have 10 minutes left. And the last 10 minutes, I want to talk about what you and I can do about this. What can we do on a practical level to feel the pain of people that they're not even in front of us? How can it work? What can we possibly do? We're not the Taz. We're not the son of the Bala Tanya. How are we supposed to feel the pain? But we know it. We're supposed to, because the Chorban was that in Tur Malka, they were dancing on one side. They didn't feel the pain of the massacres on the other side. So there is something that we are supposed to relate to. Cannot begin to tell you how upset I was just over a week ago. One of our politicians made a comment like their pain. He was talking, I don't even want to go into detail. Their pain is their pain, our pain. He was talking about different parts of the Jewish people. How lowly could a person get? And he is supposed to represent Torah Jews. A Jew is, if you want to know what a Jew is Rabbi Koldotsky. Rabbi Koldotsky, some of you know. His wife is became famous because she's the new Rebbetzin Knievsky in Bnei Brak. So Reb Chaim Knievsky and his Rebbetzin passed away. So it went down to the next generation, Rebbetzin Koldotsky. She's a big tzaddikus. Her husband, no one knows about him. He just sits there and learns Torah all day. Came what they call October 7th. He immediately got rid of his bed. He sleeps on the floor. He says, "Until I see a Yeshua for our soldiers, I'm sleeping on the floor." So Rav in Bnei Brak. His wife eventually forced him back into the bed because he contracted pneumonia. But that's what it means to care and feel about the tzar of your fellow Jews. So now I want to bring this down to a practical level. Number one, this is something that you and I can actually do. I saw something very beautiful. I printed it out. Something very beautiful. For the 9 days, the Belzer Rebbe, as you all know, here in Yerushalayim, the biggest Rebbe in Yerushalayim, over here is the Belzer Rebbe. He is not so well known outside Bell circles. He's known as being a Tzaddik Yesod Olam. He did something unusual. He made a kenis, he made a get-together for the women of Bells. It's unusual, Rebbe speaking only to the women. And as is his way, we spoke short and to the point. And he basically said to them the following message. It's so obvious, but we need to hear this again and again and again. He started off by saying that we don't know the power of our words in a positive sense. Obviously, we know the negative power of our words. What it means to look around you and to say to people a kind word. He said, a kind word, a compliment is so infinitely powerful. Now, I don't mean just to your friends. I mean people that you meet everywhere you go. You should say a nice word, say another nice word, say another nice word. Then he said, I guess a little bit tongue in cheek, even your spouse and your kids. He said even like he was joking about that because unfortunately so often we forget to compliment our own children. We forget to compliment our own spouses, everything that they do right. He says, not only should you compliment, not only should you say a nice word, but you should also sometimes learn that equally powerful is just to listen to them, let them talk. That also is an incredible way of giving yourself over to them. Now, I want to say the following. The Rebbe was saying is, when you do these things, besides the intrinsic value of what you're doing, you are building instincts of ke'ish echad b'lev echad. You're bringing yourself back to Har Sinai, to the way it was. By having these antennae called, I'm always noticing Jews around me. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it to non-Jews. I think it's beautiful to do it to non-Jews, but especially Yidden, where Rav Kook taught us there's this concept called Ahavas Chinam, doesn't exist because Ahava for Yid is always for a reason because of the Tzelem Elokim inside of them. Because of the Ke'ish Echad B'Lev Echad, we're all in this together. Build those instincts. And I want to add, the Rebbe didn't specifically say it, but for sure he meant this, that you should also do it for people who are not in your comfort zone. People, for example, who your personality and their personality clash, especially them, try and give them a compliment. Try and see something beautiful in them and say something nice about them. Try and listen to their problems. People who are not the same hashkafa as you. I mentioned Acheichem, Seinechem, and Adeichem. Stories are coming out slowly of secular Jews who are, for whatever reason, waking up. Last year in Rehovot, I heard some of you may know Rivki Nissel, no relation. We had a Shever Brachas. She just lost her father. But Rivki, at that Shever Brachas, I heard over an incredible story. One of the leaders of the anti-Torah movement, they used to scream outside Rav Dov Landa, one of the Gedolei Hador, his house, about how Yeshiva Bacham should go to the army, whatever. One of the leaders of all that is now coming back to Shmiras Shabbos, is now coming back to Shmiras HaMitzvos, is now coming back to a recognition how Torah is the pulse of the Jewish people. It is the heartbeat of our nation. He's starting to get it. So you don't give up on any single Jew. Rav Volbe used to say this. Again, I know that other Gedolim disagree. That today everyone is Tinek Shenishba. There's no possibility to hate any Jew. You must try and say nice things to everyone that comes out in your circle, to every single one of us. Another idea I want to share with you, and that is on a practical level. I happen to know that there are people listening to me now who are from my chabura. Some of you are aware that I teach tefillah to groups of ladies. So I have my group from Los Angeles, my group from Chicago. Together we learned the six words of the Shema. If you remember, I cheated you because I never gave you a class on the word Yisrael. Spoke about Shema, Yisrael, Hashem, Elokeinu, and Hashem Echad. So I gave those classes. For those of you who want to become on the inside of what I'm just saying, every morning you say the Shema. Every evening you say the Shema. The Shema is a declaration that my life stands for something. The Shema is also the declaration of the martyr on Tisha B'Av. Tens of thousands of Yidden screamed out the Shema as they gave their holy souls back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shema is the most powerful six words that can exist. It connects every Jew to every single period of history from the beginning of time to the end of time, from Yaakov Avinu to the Melech HaMashiach. What do the words mean? So let's go backwards. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Hashem means I believe in a creator. Elokeinu, he runs the world. How does he run the world? With the Jewish people as his holy partner, as the centerpiece. He gave us the Torah. He runs the world hidden, and Klal Yisrael is that light into that nation, into the nations. And by the way, we're still a light into the nations. Thank God. There are many, 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 many goyim out there. Unfortunately, they're not vocal, or they can't be vocal, who still appreciate Klal Yisrael, and they love us. We should not forget those non-Jewish brothers and sisters as well. But nevertheless, Klal Yisrael is Elokeinu, and Hashem Echad. The world is going somewhere. Rashi, in this week's parasha of Eschanan, on the sixth word of the Shema, says the world is going to us, Efa, Chala'amim, Safa Barua. All the nations of the world will recognize as Klal Yisrael. And in the end, Bayayimahu Yashem Echad, Ushmo Echad. And that's when Klal Yisrael is once again Ki'ish Echad, Belev Echad. So again, Hashem, creator, Elokeinu, runs the world. Hashem Echad brings the world to its final destiny. What's Shema Yisrael? Shema means I hear, means I made a choice. When you hear something, you hear it through your personality. Through your own essence. Shema, I made a choice, not because of pressure, not because it's the cool thing to do, not because for Shidduchim, I see some of my students over here, Yael. Okay, it's not because of Shidduchim. You do it because this is what I stand for. Shema, I make a choice. I hear because this is who I am, Yisrael. My destiny is one with the destiny of the Jewish people. I made a choice, but my choice is connected to my nation that begins with Avraham Avinu and ends with the Melech HaMashiach. Unless you're a student of the Ramchal, some of you are my students of the Ramchal, you could say from the Chet of Adam HaRishon, that Adam HaRishon lifnei Chet, to the Tikkun of that Chet. Doesn't make any difference. Shema Yisrael. For those of you who wanted my class on Yisrael, we just had it. Klal Yisrael has to say the Shema with Kavanah and say, my choice is intertwined with that of my nation. And at that moment, remind yourself that your pain is the pain of the nation, and your nation's pain is your pain. We're all in this together. To do acts of chesed again and again and again, more chesed and more chesed, more nice words, more kind words, more compliments, till we get that instinct where we can feel instinctively the pain of the people around us, and ultimately the pain of every single Jew. That's what it means to say Shema Yisrael. That's what it means to be part of the Jewish people. So I want to conclude. I want to conclude that I should never have to give this class again. But I want to conclude by saying, who's going to fix this? We don't look to our brothers and sisters who don't have the opportunity that we and I have. We have to look at ourselves. We have to say, Im eina nili mili, we, the Chizuk Mission ladies, and all those that are joining us today, we have to take achrayus on Tisha B'Av and say to ourselves, I'm not going to sit here on the floor and cry and not do something about it, or else what's the point? I'm going to listen to Hashem's messages. Hashem has spoken to us. He spoke to us on Simchas Torah. He spoke to us on Parshas Baaleinu. He spoke to us in the 9 days. And he's giving us very clear messages. What we need fixing is our instincts of how we look at the Jews around us and how we feel for our fellow Jew. Be'ez Hashem Yisbarach, God willing, I'm going to go back to the way we started. If you remember, I quoted from my keynotes. Olim la'arba de'galim b'tzeisi mi'Yisroel. Let's push away the Ola Yishmaelim, the Machanas Arelim. Let's push away that partnership of Ishmael and the Arelim and Christianity. When I say that, I don't mean everyone. I mean when the BBC quotes Hamas health ministry to give over facts on the ground that caused Jewish blood to be spilled. That should become the past, and we should go back to the Tovu Olim, the beauty of Klal Yisrael, where everyone is different, everyone has their own tent, but yet, La'arba de Golim, we're all together with our flags in harmony, round the Mishkan, and that Mishkan should not be the Mishkan anymore. It should be the Beis HaMikdash, the holy Beis HaMikdash. We should be zoche to go and see it b'mheirah v'yameinu in its full glory b'sifarto. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you for having this
Thank
all. Thank you.
you. Too meaningful,
Thank you.
Pastor.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Very much.